My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us.
Always great to be here. You're a nice oasis from this heat that's out there.
Well, let's start with the heat being on the president a little bit when it comes to job numbers. The total jobs created in the month of July, 163,000, a net plus, beat expectations. However, the overall unemployment rate ticked up to 8.3%. The White House making a point that it's actually 8.254, and it was rounded up to 8.3. John, the U6 rate, which a lot of people consider the real unemployment rate, now at 15%. So clearly talking points on both sides of this report, but which side gets the better of it?
Certainly the Republicans do, because, again, they can go back to Barack Obama's promise that unemployment would never rise above 8%. And again, remember something. We have heard this over and over again, these figures that are perilously close to the double digits. Do I think they'll go into double digits before November? Probably not. But are they declining? Not noticeably. Maybe they'll come down a little bit. But it all seems to fluctuate around the terrible 8 or the real 15, depending on your point of view. My guess is that Mitt Romney and the Republicans will focus on this fact. It has been said that if the campaign focuses on Romney himself and his business background and his personal wealth, he'll lose. If it focuses on the economy, he'll win.
So, John, we only get two, maybe three more reports before Election Day. Is the story cast at this point? Most people seem to think that we're probably going to be pretty close to here, as you mentioned, the rest of the year. So, basically, are people already making up their mind about what they think of the economy?
I think so now. And, again, unless there were a dramatic drop or a dramatic increase, I can't see it change much from now. But if it doesn't change much from now, a lot of people are going to say about the president, he's had 4 years to do things. Why isn't it changing?
John, let's move to another issue on the campaign trail that just sort of broke today. It's been kind of out there for a few days, but getting more attention today. And that's that the Obama administration is suing the state of Ohio over a law that would give more flexibility to military members to vote. They could vote up to the Monday before the election, whereas non-military members can only vote to the Friday before. The Obama administration suing because they say it should be uniform for everyone. What do you make of the merits, and what do you make of the politics of that?
Well, the merits of it are a very old one. If you read the late Alan Drury's Senate Journal, 1943-45, this was the first major debate that the young Drury covered from the Senate gallery about whether troops would have special advantages while fighting overseas for America, whether they would be marched up to the polls and literally ordered to vote, or whether they would just be treated like everyone else. And, of course, the argument is when you're having someone shoot at you and you're under orders to defend your country abroad and fight the enemy, you may not just have time to do your duty of what you're fighting for. That's the argument right now. Either side could have an advantage on it. My own guess is that it certainly is meritorious to say that everyone should be treated the same. But then again, a person who puts his life on his line for a country isn't the same as you and me. And I would have to say that in an election year that is likely to be a very close presidential contest, I would not want to be on the other side of the troops.
Well, and there's a lot of organizations already lining up against the administration on this case, so we'll see what the impact of that is, both legally and politically. John, on to another issue that the president's been dealing with, although not very publicly, and that is the issue of Syria. The violence continues. Kofi Annan says he's quitting as the special envoy effective the end of the month, and now we learn this week that the president has issued secret orders, but apparently they're not too secret if we know about them, to the CIA to assist the rebels. There's no talk yet of any actual troop involvement, but we are clearly taking sides in this fight. What do you make of that?
Well, it's not unlike what the president has been doing in Africa in the manhunt for Joseph Kony, the warlord who has all the kidnapped child soldiers. He has been given advice to troops from the Congo, and he has about 500 advisors there. They're known as the Obama Brigade, and their advice is very much appreciated by the military in the effort to apprehend Mr. Comey. In the case of Syria, advisors and covert assistance are certainly welcomed. Any kind of assistance will be welcomed by the Free Syrian Army and all those who seek to drive away Mr. Assad from office. As Jay Carney, the White House press secretary, has told us at numerous briefings, Assad is on the wrong side of history and is going to be remembered for killing as many people as he can on his way out. This is something that the public is not going to tolerate, although it wouldn't tolerate troop actions either. Remember, in Libya, the United Nations had to go along, and Russia and China had to step aside for that action. That's not the case now. I do think that Syria will take a little longer than Libya because this outside action isn't there. But again, it's nice to be on the side of the people we don't know instead of the devil we obviously do know, the devil of Damascus, Mr. Assad.
John, on to the biggest political story of the week by far, Chick-fil-A. This was the story, of course, of Dan Cathy, the president and CEO of Chick-fil-A, telling a Christian radio program that he supported the biblical definition of marriage, one man, one woman, thought that pridefully, arrogantly, suggesting that we know better as a culture now than God, is inviting God's judgment. Gay activists have promised to protest. In fact, they're doing it here at the end of the week towards Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day attracted a huge turnout on Wednesday, record sales day for the organization. Some say it was about defending traditional marriage. Others say it was about free speech. Others say it was about both. What do you make of the whole Chick-fil-A episode?
Well, I think a lot of people are eating more chicken than the chicken eaters speak. Chick-fil-A has been around for a long time, since 1946. I had the pleasure of spending an afternoon with Truett Cathy, the founder, and his son Dan at the National Press Club when they spoke there a few years ago. His views as a believing Christian are very well known, just as the fact that all Chick-fil-A outlets are closed on Sunday. I don't see what the big surprise was. What surprises me is the politicians who get involved and make this an issue. Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel saying Chick-fil-A is not welcome in their city. Here in the district, Mayor Vincent Gray calling them hate chicken. And so many other big city mayors from San Francisco to New York telling the makers of this fine product they're not welcome because their views are a little different. The public and the consumer obviously felt otherwise. My guess is this is going to fade in a short time, and those who disagree with Chick-fil-A, if they really strongly believe that, there's a way they can respond. As Mr. Cathy himself would say, don't eat mo' chicken.
John, let's move real quickly to some primaries coming up on Tuesday, August 7th. First of all, congratulations on your prediction of Ted Cruz winning the Republican Senate nomination in Texas. You nailed that one on the head. Let's go to Missouri now. That's going to be a very close Republican Senate race for the right to take on Democrat Claire McCaskill, considered one of the most vulnerable incumbents in the Senate this year. It's a very tight three-way race. It includes Sarah Steelman, as well as Todd Akin, a longtime conservative member of Congress, and a self-finance candidate. So who emerges on Tuesday?
Well, they're all impressive, and I had a conversation with Peter Kinder, the lieutenant governor and a Republican, who said, I couldn't guess for the life of me. My own guess would be there seems to be a Steelman surge in the end, even though John Bruner, the self-financed candidate, has used a lot of his own money and lead in the polls. Sarah Steelman has a good organization, has generated a lot of enthusiasm, but she's got Hurricane Sarah on her side. Sarah Palin, that is, who not only endorsed the former state treasurer, but is coming to the Show Me State to show her support for Sarah Steelman. I say it's Sarah Steelman, and that will face up against Claire McCaskill.
And real quickly, in Michigan, it's been a pretty quiet race nationally for the Republican nomination to take on Democrat Debbie Stabenow, but it's flared up quite recently between Pete Hoekstra and Clark Durant. Who wins on Tuesday?
Clark Durant by a very narrow margin. He's had a strong grassroots organization. The third candidate in the race, Gary Glenn, dropped out and endorsed him, and he has the blessings of the Detroit Free Press editorial page. I've known Clark Durant for about a quarter century, and I've known Pete Hoekstra for nearly 20 years. They're both very capable men who will give Senator Stabenow a close race. But in this case, given the low turnout in the Water Wonderland's heat, and the enthusiasm that seems to be going to the Durant camp. I call it Durant by a hair.
Well, if
you're listening, Clark, I'm sorry I haven't been able to nail down that interview today, but I've been in and out of the office.
John Gizzi, multitasking. We love it. John, have a great weekend.
As I continue to multitask and vow to get everything done and keep everybody happy, I'm John Gizzi.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.